The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of the Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey there, everyone. Welcome to the program today, Afternoons with Mike, here along the Shepherd Radio Network. I have with me someone that I've just had the privilege to meet as she came to the studio. Her name is Alicia Edson. Alicia is the director of a ministry. It is an on-air ministry, actually an on-internet radio station that she is putting together called Ocean Waves Radio. We're going to hear about that. We're going to hear the vision that she has and the fact that she is one, like many Americans, who fight with the loss of physical vision. And while that is true, she still has an eye to the Lord and a vision that God has given her to take the gospel and to put it out there. And this is a marvelous story in the making. I think you're going to love my guest and today's program. So if you know anybody that battles with vision problems, this is going to be a program they need to hear. Call them. Let them know it's on right now and how they can listen to it. Alicia, welcome to my program.
Hi, thank you.
So tell me a little bit about yourself. I know that you are originally not from this area, so go ahead and give us the whole story.
Well, I was born in California. I had some issues growing up just with family. None of us were Christian. I was told that I had to go to Catholic church, and that's okay if, you know, you learn the right stuff, but apparently I didn't at the time. So I didn't really know about Jesus. I didn't know about the gospel, and I just didn't know the truth growing up. And so my life, you know, was in the mix of a lot of dysfunction.
Mm-hmm.
And later, when I was about, well, I was in my late 20s, I was introduced to Jesus at a Baptist church in California, Lakewood, California, and they taught me a lot of biblical truths, and I changed a lot of the worldly stuff that I was into, and it was a great deal back then, and someday I'll write a book and tell everybody all about it. But I began a new journey at that point. And I had a good friend that brought me to her church, and she kind of helped guide me through meeting other believers my age and in my same situation. I was a single mom, and I needed to be a good mom for my child, and I wanted him to go to church and to understand, and he went to Sunday school, and we just became a whole different family, the two of us, and yeah, that's kind of how it all began.
Now, you mentioned that to me before we began the recording of this program that you were born sighted.
Yes.
But at some point early on, you were given the word, the diagnosis, that there were issues with your vision. Share that with us.
Well, I was 8 years old, and I was having a little bit of trouble in school. I was doing well up till that point, but then my teacher at the time could tell that there was a problem, and she suggested to my mom that I go see a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And so the doctor told me at that time that I had an eye disease called chronic uveitis. It's still fairly rare, even after all these years. But my doctor was very good about explaining things to me. But he gave me glasses at the same time. So with the glasses, my vision at that point was corrected.
Mm-hmm.
So at 8 years old, you just think, well, I'll wear glasses and I'll be fine. So the whole blindness thing kind of went out the window for me. So I kind of lived for a long time in denial, I think, because every couple of years they would give me stronger lenses and I could still see. Mm-hmm. But at some point, by the time I was 18, they just didn't work anymore. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So basically, this is something that they told you from the beginning, that it was going to end this way?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that it would end in complete blindness then?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Now, that had to be, I'm sure, for your parents, not just you, but I'm sure for your parents, that had to be a very scary diagnosis. And did you talk about it with them a lot at that point?
Actually, not really, because I think none of us knew how to respond, mm-hmm. and or what that might be like. I remember my mom thinking that I would grow up and just kind of be a burden, I think, or not have anywhere to go, or anything to do. And my mom died pretty young, and I wanted to prove to her, even though she was gone, that that wasn't the case. And so I went to school, I got an associate's degree, and I got a bachelor's degree, and I got a master's degree.
And you got all of that fully blind.
Totally blind.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
And I'm sure with Braille, you learned that as well?
We did Braille, mm-hmm. and we did talking books, and we did a lot of adaptive and accessible ways to make it through.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
With the ADA, the advent of those kinds of helps, and really even in today's technological advances, audiobooks are so common that mm-hmm. They're popular with both sighted and those that have vision problems. I mean,
yes.
It's a lot of people like just to put them on when they're driving in the car.
Oh, yeah.
And they can hear. And so I can imagine that really helps in the educational process as it did you.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. So you were 18 when the vision changed to a point where you could no longer drive.
Correct. Yes.
So the first 2 years, and so I can only imagine that you've got good memories of those 2 years while you were driving.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
and
yeah.
So that helps you just to cope. And I think that is a real advantage over those that never had that opportunity.
Because
you've got a visualization inwardly.
Yes.
In your heart.
Yes.
Oh, that's
mm-hmm.
that's good.
Yeah.
Now, how did you manage the process of learning anything about radio? How did that start?
Well, I was asked if I would like to be a DJ on another station, and I jumped at the chance. I had already been a counselor, I had already been a teacher, and I retired, and I wanted to do this. And mm-hmm. it just sounded like so much fun. I love the beach, and that's where Ocean Waves comes from. And I love music, and I just thought it was perfect. So I just started really with DJing, and the station was very secular. They did not want me to do Christian music at all. And I asked for like a year and a half. And finally, after a bit, they weren't a very accommodating place. And so I left, but I missed it so much. And my husband said, probably you could have your own station. And so we started looking into it. We started doing the research. And 6 months later, Ocean Waves Radio went on the air. That was just October 16th. And so it's been 1 year. And mm-hmm. we've been on the air. I've learned so much. Still, some of the technology is new, and learning mixers and how they work with streamers and this, that, and the other thing. And so it's just been a great learning experience, and it's been wonderful working with my team, and I have a great team and we want to build our team. So I'm really excited.
Now, the team that you have, are they local? I know that a lot of your DJs I read are actually not only not in this area, they're not in this country.
Right. That's right. We have one of my DJs is originally from Wales and is now living in England.
Mm-hmm.
And we have DJs all over the country. We have some in Florida, a couple others other than me, and we have two in Texas. We have St. Louis. We have Mississippi. We're everywhere. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, you're based, though, in Central Florida, right?
Yes, Orlando area.
In the Orlando mm-hmm. area. Mm-hmm. And yes. Is that also the base for Ocean Waves Radio?
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
So I'm assuming then that you've got all the servers and you've got all of the production equipment and maybe even a studio in your own home or something
yes.
like that?
Mm-hmm. Yep. I have a studio in my own home and we're still adapting it. To work for different things, like to do this. I would love to be able to interview some of our staff. Mm-hmm. I would love to be able to interview local pastors and just a lot of people with visual impairments that might be able to inspire others.
What have you learned in doing radio? And I know you work with a lot of people. That and I saw a statistic that 75% of those that are working with you are themselves dealing with some level of impairment visually.
Yes. Yeah.
How do you get in touch with them and how did they hear about you?
Oh, gosh. Well, for each one, it's probably a different story. But I used to belong to a chat game site because I love to play games and I belong to this thing and some people were sighted and some people weren't. And so some of them I met through that. And I got in touch with others through some other people. One day I was at church and I just heard this man's voice and I thought, he would be a great DJ. And I just said, Jim, do you want to be a DJ? And he's like, well, what are you talking about? And so I explained my dream and my goal. And he joined the team. And then we have another guy who's much older than even you, in his 80s. And he is working with us. And he and his wife do yesteryear's baseball. So we have teams from way back play one another based on their statistics. And that's a really fun show.
Now, and so they recreate games?
Yes, they recreate baseball games.
You know, there was a guy that I worked with, Alicia, in Indiana, Evansville, mm-hmm. Indiana. Mm-hmm. Tragically, his name was Marv Bates. He died in a plane crash along mm-hmm. with the University of Evansville basketball team back in the 70s, I would say mm-hmm. somewhere around the mid-70s. I think, if I'm not mistaken, it would have been in late 75. That's what it seems like. But at or 76. But at any rate, Marv was amazing. He was a classic old style radio guy, marvelous mm-hmm. voice. Mm-hmm. And he used to come up to my studio when I was in country music. I worked for the country music station in our city, and he would come up and recreate games. He would just delay the game. He would be, he would have all these people that he had on a line, on a phone line, and they would be either watching the game or at the game, and they would be relaying to him. And this man would recreate sound effects of the baseball bat.
Oh, that's fun.
Crowd noises. Mm-hmm. He did it all, and I would watch him, and he did that on the air.
Yeah, that's great.
It was a real hoot. Yeah. And he was on our station there for a while. He was a marvelous individual. So is that what they do on your station?
We use a game. It's kind of a dice game. And with each roll of the dice, a different play happens. And based on that roll of the dice and the person who might be up to bat or who might be pitching based on stats. Things are just created through the game.
Mm-hmm.
And so Paul and Faye are their names who co-host the show. And they create the whole thing. They send me their recordings. I put them in my Goldwave editing software, and I do what you just said he did on the air. I put crowd noise in there.
Get out of here. Oh, that's wonderful.
Bats and do all this stuff. Yeah. We even have a guy in the crowd saying, hot dogs.
That's awesome. You know, that's an art. That is an art that would kind of ring back to the golden years of radio back in the 40s and even the 30s,
mm-hmm.
when radio was king, before there was television, 40s, even into the early 50s. Television started in the 1950. And by then, those days, those people that were on radio back, the Bob Hopes and so forth, they would have moved and migrated into television. But there were so many imaginative, mind-blowing kind of radio programs, mm-hmm. even mysteries and fun things like
that
were so imaginative.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Because radio, as one person in our team often refers to it as, it's theater of the mind.
Oh, yeah.
And mm-hmm. that's what you do.
Yes. Yeah, it's really fun.
And you do it not on the air, not in a radio station in the proverbial common sense of a transmitter and a tower and all of that. But with the advent of the internet, mm-hmm. When people listen through their computer or even on apps, they're able to listen to what is functionally like a radio station.
That's right.
Right from the internet.
Right.
And that's how you do that. Now, this begs to me, knowing radio production as I know it, there are a lot of things. You mentioned that you've got a software that you use for editing, and mm-hmm. yet you're having to lean on verbal commands with that software. Or
right.
How does that work?
Well, we have a screen reading software. There are several out there, but I use one called JAWS. It's comes from Freedom Scientific, and it reads all the text that's on my screen, on my computer screen. So between that and listening to what's been recorded, I'm able to mix voices with music and sound effects and just make everything sound like it's right in front of you.
Oh, that's wonderful. I've got to mm-hmm. check this out. I've not heard this station yet, but I'm going to be listening to this.
Oh, and you'll love it.
Yeah, I think I will. I think this is awesome.
Yeah.
My guest today is Alicia Edson, and she has Ocean Waves Radio. It's an internet show. It's an internet station. And maybe a lot of our listeners didn't even realize that there were such stations as that, but mm-hmm. they're around, and
yes.
a lot of them, and not unlike the Spotify's really of the world, and
right.
it's just something
exactly.
delivered through computers, through smartphones, through tablets. We'll be back with Alicia in a moment. Don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike. You're right here on The Shepherd. Alicia Edson is my guest. Alicia is one that has been, since she was 18 years old, completely blind. And hers was a gradual, over about a 10-year period, where her vision was lost. And she was told at age 8, if you just tuned in, that she had a condition, an eye disease, that over the period of 10 years robbed her of her vision, but it did not rob her of her life. And I think that's an important thing, although, you know, you have a statistic that when I first heard it, it was shockingly low, that 4%, only 4% of those in our country that are completely blind are employed, that they are having a job.
Right.
That seems incredibly low.
It is.
Now, what... From your perspective, I would be very interested in your perspective of the reason for that.
Well, because people are not educated well and don't know the things that the visually impaired can do. we, out of all the disabilities that you could imagine, blind people have the highest amount of education. So we can go to school and we can get doctorate degrees, but no one will give us a chance in their businesses. And I shouldn't say no one, because I've had some great opportunities mm-hmm. in my life. I worked for Seminole State College of Florida here, and I, you know, was a director in a counseling center before that. So I have had some great opportunities, but that's not the case for many of our DJs and for many people here in the United States. People are afraid because they don't know. They just see red flags all over the place. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so when they're without any kind of income coming in, then they're either living off of some disability pension, or
yes.
if they have that, or Social Security.
Yes.
So they're living very meagerly.
Yes.
And maybe with the aid of family members or whatever. But the point of it is that some of these people, many of those that are blind, are highly educated and yet not being given an opportunity to use. And that's so sad to me, because you think of how many jobs there are that are now technological jobs, just like what you're doing.
Right. Exactly.
And you have overcome what would be the impairment of not being able to see, and using technology, using some of the aids that have been developed for those visually impaired,
yes.
you're able to do something as extensive as operating a complete radio station.
Yes. And it's, I feel very fortunate to live in today's age, because, you know, 75 years ago, I would not be able to do that because the technology just wasn't there.
Well, even less than that.
Probably.
Yeah. Yeah. I had mentioned to you before we began our recording today that in the mid 70s, when I was in radio, Rhonda, the young lady that worked for us, she was given an opportunity at that radio station by my
right.
general manager.
Mm-hmm.
And I had met her at a college class that I was taking, and told him about her, and I was so blessed at his openness.
Mm-hmm.
And we were looking for a person on the weekend to handle a shift. And I said, I believe she could do it.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, would you be willing to work with her? And I said, I would love to be able to train her.
Yeah.
And so what happened, she did it. And she became a full-fledged radio board operator at a time
great.
Where... You know, it was not the technology. My goodness, I played 45s and 33s.
Yes.
And folks, for those of you that are younger, that means vinyl records.
Right, that's right. Yeah.
We were spinning the discs back in that day, not like today where you're playing off of either a CD player, and most of that's gone now too.
Yeah.
Most it's just MP3s
mm-hmm.
and WAV files.
Yeah.
And that's what you deal with
yes.
yourself.
Yes, that's exactly what we use.
Oh my goodness. Mm-hmm. So how long does it take you to do your show that you do?
Well, I do several shows. I do 6 shows a week, and some of them are 1-hour shows and some of them are 2-hour shows. And they're all very different. I do a couple Christian things, and I do a beat show, and I do music for the old soul, which is all 30s, 40s, and early 50s. So, and I even do a country show.
You do?
Yeah.
All right. So who's your favorite country artist?
Blake Shelton.
All right. There you go. I like Blake Shelton. Yeah. Honeybee. There you go.
Yeah. Perfect.
Yeah, yeah. I like one of his, I like that song especially.
Yeah.
This is so interesting. How did you uncover all that you had to learn? Where did the ideas come from for Ocean Wave Radio?
Well, when I was a very young girl, my uncle was always into music, and he was not much older than me, and he loved to surf, and he would pack me up and take me to the beach with him, and I would just watch him surf, and I would think he was the coolest thing ever. And I just fell in love with the beach because of that experience, I think. So Ocean Waves Radio, the name came from that. My DJ name is Beach Baby. And and so it's all based around, we have K-pop now, which originated in Korea, and we have island pop from Hawaii. We just have a lot of variety, and there's really something there for everyone.
So obviously your radio station, Ocean Waves, is not just Christian. You do have some other types of music, like you mentioned, the 40s and all of that.
Right. Yeah. And we have 2 days that is absolute all Christian, and it's praise and worship and hymns and Southern gospel. And so we have quite a variety in that realm as well.
Now, you may know this name. I'm going to be up at First Baptist Church, Oxford, on the 13th of November. I'm privileged to be the MC for this concert, and it's their 142nd church anniversary. Can you imagine?
Oh, wow.
A church that is, that's been around 142 years.
Yeah,
that's pretty amazing. And Lauren Talley is going to be, she's one of the Gaither singers often on the reunion programs.
That's right. Yeah.
She's going to
be
the
play the Gaithers.
Yeah. Well, you would have, if you ever listened to any of the homecoming specials, she's on them regularly.
Yeah.
And we're going to be privileged to get to meet her. And I'm actually going to, I found out today, I'm going to get to play guitar at this thing. That's going to be a lot of fun. I'm going to be playing behind the Pastor Andrew Crop, who is going to be sharing, and so we'll get to be there doing that as well. That's going to be a lot of fun. But you know, you've got so many genres of music that you've already described that Ocean Waves plays. What would be your favorite? You know, I'm betting already it's going to be something beach music. Do you like that? The Ventures
do.
And
from
back in that day.
Yep, I love that stuff. Annette Funicello is always very fun. Beach Boys, of course.
Dan
and
Dean,
yeah, I love that stuff. I really do enjoy the country and the Christian though as well. But I think those would be my top three. Yeah.
Now, how did these people hear about Ocean Waves initially? All of the people that you've got 75% of your staff, and I'm not sure what that number actually is in terms of numbers of people, but 75% of them are, again, going back to what we said earlier, suffering from some form or level of blindness.
Yes, and we all have met through different different venues, different different things. A lot of it is internet-based because there's a lot of gaming in the visually impaired world. There's a lot of music in the visually impaired world. There's a lot of books. I am part of a book club for visually impaired. So it's come from all over. And sometimes people just don't even know that they could be eligible to do it. And so sometimes I've had to twist a couple arms and say, just give it a try. And then they do, and they fall in love with it. So it's been different for every single person.
Now, there must be a lot of support groups out there on the internet for people who are suffering from this vision loss. Would you say that you've met some of them just casually in like support groups or chat rooms or whatever like
yes.
that?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
So sometimes you don't know much about them except for what they say in a room. And, you know, that's not often very much. So
How is your radio station funded?
Well, my husband and I started all of it. And we are now using Patreon to earn money. We also have a shop, an Ocean Waves Radio shop that you can find on our website.
So you sell merch and things like that?
Yes.
All right.
Yeah, we do. And so we are in the process of changing a little bit of our website so that we can take donations outside of Patreon. And we will be offering that within the next couple months. And then people can donate to support one of our DJs or two of our DJs.
Are you a 501c3?
We are not a 501c3. We are an actual business.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So donations aren't tax deductible, but you still get donations. It's basically almost, again, like a membership type of a fee where people can do it that way.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Like Spotify.
Like Spotify. Exactly.
That's right.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
And
this is
I
so.
iHeartRadio.
Yeah. I've just, I'm looking forward to tuning in and listening to what you're doing and how that works. Now, I know I wanted to give a shout out to your friends at Willow Creek. Drew Taylor is the one that told us about you.
Yes.
And I know that you know a lot of people that I know that go to that wonderful place.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
It sounds like it.
Yeah. So basically, how long have you been there?
Oh, 15 years.
Really? So you've seen some changes?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know my good friend Pete Allinson then.
I do. I love Pete.
Yeah, Pete's been on this program a number of times.
Oh, and I'm trying to get him online, so.
Oh, he's so good.
Yeah,
yeah.
He is
and
great.
The Forge and all that's going. And you
and
also have
book.
Steve Brown.
Yes, and he you'll hear Steve Brown on my radio station. Yeah.
Now, Steve Brown has the consummate radio voice, if there ever was one.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. No one could even really do a good job of mimicking him.
Oh, no, there's no chance.
Maybe in the days when he was alive, J.D. Sumner could have done it. But
maybe, yeah.
Because he's really dynamic. And I had him for a class at RTS.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was my professor.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was something. And it was very interesting.
Hmm.
So, how you know, this whole thing of Ocean Waves Radio, what are you seeing for the future? Where are you wanting to grow this to?
I want to be able to pay my DJs the wage that other Americans are getting so that they can not feel like they have no worth or no value. Unfortunately, one of my DJs who was married 9 years, has a 7-year-old daughter. His wife left him because he couldn't bring in income. And he's working for me now for free. And we want to change that. We want him to make money so he can support his daughter.
And, you know, this is such a shocking 4% figure. 4% of those that are blind in the U.S. may well be educated with either an undergraduate or a master's or perhaps even a doctorate, and yet are not able to work, not because they don't want to work, because there are not enough employers that are offering them a position.
That's right. Yeah.
And that's something that all of us can pray about and ask God for help and, my goodness, taking part in something like that.
Yeah.
And how can people find Ocean Waves Radio?
Well, you can go to www.oceanwavesradio.com.
As simple as that.
It's very simple. Yeah,
yeah.
Very simple. And you can read about us and you can read our starfish story. It's beautiful. And you can learn about our DJs and there's all kinds, and you can shop. You can shop till you drop there.
And it's free to listen, right?
Absolutely, yes.
And yet, as we've just talked about, there are financial needs behind all of that free listening.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
And you've changed your studio. You've grown your studio. I mean, I'm sure it's always something.
Yeah. We started with 3 DJs, and we have like 16 now.
So do they pre-record their shows and then send them to you?
Some of them do. Some of them. Most of us are live.
Really?
Yeah, most of us are live.
Oh, that's something wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah.
That day is gone for a lot of radio stations, you know. So
that's what I keep hearing. And it's like, it's so much fun because the best part about it is the listener participation. People calling in or writing in and saying, I want to hear whatever song, you know, and we find it and we play it. So, I mean, it's just, it's fun. And then we have one show late on a Friday night that's kind of all love songs. And we have couples who send each other dedications. And so it's really fun too.
Oh, that sounds marvelous.
Yeah, it's nice.
When can they hear you? What time is your show on?
Oh, gosh. Well, depends on what you like.
Well, which show? Friday, that's right, because you do a bunch of them.
Yeah, Fridays from 1 to 3. I do my beach shows.
That's 1 p.m. Eastern, to 3.
Eastern time, of course. Mm-hmm. And country is 3 to 5 on Thursdays. I do a game show Tuesday evenings from 7 to 9. And I do music for the old soul, the 30s, 40s, and 50s, for 1 hour every Friday morning, 8 to 9. And I do hymns for him mm-hmm. on Sunday mornings, 8 to 9.
Ah, this is so great.
I know.
Oh, Alicia, it's been great to have you on the program.
Well, thanks
and I
so
wish,
much for having me.
You're certainly welcome. I wish you the best. And I'm inspired, really inspired at what you're doing and how you're doing it. And just wish God's best for Ocean Waves Radio.
Oh, thank you so much.
It's really great to have met you.
Yeah,
and friends, we'll be back in a moment. Don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike here on The Shepherd. Hey, friends, welcome back again to the program. I have in the studio with me Stephen Davis. Let me give you just a little bit of an introduction for Stephen. Stephen has kind of grew up in the Orlando area, went to Faith Assembly School back in the day. Pastor Carl Stevens there is a believer who has become a fireman. And sadly, and that's what we're here to talk about today, sadly, he was terminated, not because of bad work, not because of problems on his job, purely because he refused to be vaccinated. And it is now a big story. A lot of has happened since that firing, and we're going to hear all about those kinds of details. Stephen, welcome to my program.
How are you?
It is great. It's great to talk to you.
Thank you for having me.
It is a sad circumstance that brings us together. You know, I've had Matt Staver on, Matt Staver with the Liberty Council, and we've talked extensively, not just recently, but over the past several months. I would say that Matt saw this thing kind of from afar. He saw the future clouds rising for this now political storm. And not only a political storm, it's a culture storm. It's affecting people like you, and it's affecting people who are truck drivers and people who are in the military. So this thing is a sad thing. Now, let's talk about it from the general issue. Again, this is dealing with the COVID vaccine that a lot of people are getting. A lot of people were told in the beginning there were no problems with this, even though it was never really approved. It was never really officially passing all of the kind of protocols that vaccines normally go through. But this one came on us in this sense of a pandemic. And initially, it looked okay. But then there were growing concerns about the, I guess you could say, the impact upon people after they got it. So bring us up to date. How was all of that with you? Why did you choose that you were not going to be vaccinated and make a stand in your job that ultimately cost you your job?
Well, I mean, my wife and I feel pretty strongly about the vaccination. I don't think it had anything to do with it being politicized at first. And then I think that it started to become more of a political game. The vaccine itself, I just don't think there's enough data out there. I feel like there's a lot of things that are not being reported out on the mainstream. I watch a lot of things on the outside that tell a different story. And so I felt that it wasn't really necessary for me, as far as right now. I've never been someone that was against it. Just recently, I started to feel that way because they're handing out donuts to entice people to go get a vaccination. They're handing out, you know, free lunches at the burger joint, free beers for a year, you know, and not here in the state of Florida, but you know, in other states, other communities up north, and that kind of made me question why are people enticing us to do these type of things? I mean, you can live a healthy life and be comfortable and not have these diseases and stuff like that if you live a healthy life. Anyways, going into the discussion about my termination, is it really stood. These are some concerns that people aren't listening to. These are some concerns that, as a battalion chief with Orange County, I was fielding these concerns. I had men and women in my battalion that were expressing these concerns, that they felt that they were young, they didn't need it, that the survival rate was so high that they didn't have to worry about it.
Over 90%.
Yeah.
It would be, you know, and it was quickly found out, not long into the whole pandemic, that it was an issue that was most dangerous to those that had comorbidities and those that
exactly.
had problems of some other nature that would make them more susceptible for
correct.
This problem.
Correct.
But a healthy person, most healthy people had it. And they got over it.
And they got over it. And you saw that in my department, because we've had hundreds, I don't know the exact figure, but we've had a lot of people in our department that had COVID, and they've all come back to work within, you know, a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
If anybody's had the flu is not a very good feeling. It'll put you in bed for a week. I've had the flu many years ago, only time I've had it. And I'll tell you, yeah, it was the worst time. And I would imagine COVID is probably the same. That's how people have explained it to me. I've been fortunate, knock on wood, you know, I've not had COVID. But then again, I also take care of myself and I eat the right things. I do a lot of exercise. And I think that plays a big role in it as well. But hearing these concerns from a lot of young men and women, they didn't want this vaccination because they felt that it wasn't necessary for them. But in August, we were told that if we did not get this vaccination, we were going to be terminated. A career that we have chosen, a career that is a calling for many of us. Mm-hmm. For me, I was 14 years old and wanted to do it. I went into the military wanting to be a fireman, and I ended up going and being a medic instead. But then getting out of the service and joining the fire department, this was my calling to be in the fire service, to do those things.
And you worked your way up.
And I've worked my way up.
To become a battalion chief.
Yes, sir.
And not only that, but as in talking with you, you were also being groomed to be the kind of the face and help with the public information that needs to come out after a disaster or fire or whatever.
Yeah. So that was part of some of the training that I'd received early in my position. I was giving classes to kind of be in the front to speak to, you know, media, to speak to. If I'm the incident commander on a fire scene, to deliver those messages to the public.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, those are some of the things that I had. And when I get out to the stations and I feel these concerns, and it's been going on for several months. It had been going on longer because guys were concerned about COVID. Guys were like, well, what do I do if this happens? How do I take care of my family? Do I go to a hotel? Do I stay, you know, with the fire service? You know, there was a lot of unanswered questions. And so when we fast forward to 2021, now we're being told a career that we've had a calling to is now going to be essentially taken from us because we have a leadership, not only as the mayor, but in our department, the leadership was putting this out as well, saying that if you didn't get it, then you were going to be terminated. Now that got walked back right before September. But I still fielded a lot of these concerns all the way up until October 1st because people didn't want to get written up. People didn't want to get tested. People didn't want to get the vaccination. People had religious exemptions. People had medical exemptions. And then the day that it came, I was given a list. When I was relieved of duty, I was given a list. And that list had, my list had 12 names, but I had a larger list because it was the entire department. And I could see that list. And that list had several people on there that I had spoken to personally that had the vaccination, who had religious exemptions, and who had medical exemptions. So my job as a battalion chief, and I feel like this is being lost in our leaders today, unfortunately, is that we're not challenging those above us. And what I mean by challenge is I can challenge somebody in a sense of being respectful and professional. I think that's the responsibility of a battalion chief in a role that is the one that manages 60. I have 60 people in my mm-hmm. battalion.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my responsibility, is to field those questions, to bring that to my leadership and to challenge those things. And when I did, I was essentially ignored and said, just do it anyways. Well, I felt that this was unlawful. And that's what I explained to them, that there is an unlawful order that you're giving right now. And I explain it like this. If I were to go into a fire scene and the homeowner is up north and they just have a summer home down here and their house catches fire, my responsibility as a fireman is to go in there and put the fire out, lock it up, make sure it's closed up, get a hold of the homeowner, and then there's some other things in that direction. If I were to give an order to one of my firemen to say, hey, you know what, they got a really nice TV, would that not be considered illegal?
Mm-hmm.
It would be the responsibility of someone underneath me to say, chief, you can't do that. Or the fireman to say, we can't do that, boss. You know, and that is essentially how I kind of explain it today, is this was an unlawful order that I was being given and I was challenging it because that's what you're supposed to do. That's the right thing.
Well, you challenged it and you had, I'm sure, some sort of deadline that was coming up that they gave you that if you don't do this by this date, then you're going to be let go.
Correct. Okay. So we had till October 1st, and this all occurred on the 5th of October. So roughly 4 days to get a list that was supposed to be together by the 1st, get it corrected before I received it on the 5th. So 4 straight days, and the list was incorrect.
Now, after that firing, when you are actually terminated, I'm sure that was a shock that just it was hard to take. But when that happened, it wasn't that long, and the governor came out with basically a prohibition against these firings, and yet we're seeing not only in this area where we are, but around the country, other, I guess you could say, businesses, companies, major organizations are still, this is still very much on the table, even though, like what you said, there's no legal precedent. There's really no, according to our friend Matt Staver at the Liberty Council, these mandates to get it are not grounded in any legal framework.
Right. And you know, the governor DeSantis is a great man, and he's come out and he actually said during that that press conference, he said it to all those of us that were in the behind in the office before we came out. He said he never anticipated this to happen, that business owners were going to fire people. I mean, those are the people that run your business. Why would you fire them for this vaccination mandate? He's the one that says, they never thought that this would be a problem.
Yeah.
And it's happening here in Central Florida. Let me rephrase that. It's happening here in Orange County because it's not happening here in Central Florida. It's not happening in any of the cities here in Orange County. It's not happening in any of the surrounding counties from Orange County. It's only happening in Orange County. And why is that? So that's my question here is why is this mayor pushing for this stuff, but everyone around him is not, they don't have the same.
There's not the same mandate.
So, yeah. So the governor did join a lawsuit. The state does have some interest in the lawsuit against Orange County. And this is where we're sitting today because it's illegal. You know, they should not be mandating people. And there's nothing that's come out from the federal government either.
Have you been given any word about a recourse other than just the lawsuit? But meaning, is there any chance of rejoining later, getting your job back? Is that even a possibility?
So right now I'm in a grievance process. It's an internal grievance process with my department and my union that I'm affiliated with. That is a long time. We're talking about possibly March, maybe even longer, mm-hmm. that we'll actually have a decision, that might be in my support. However, it's never a guarantee either.
Right.
So I can present my case. I think that in my particular case, there's quite a bit of evidence that would support why I refuse to give those orders, why I refuse to give those reprimands. I believe that we do have a very strong case, but it's not a guarantee. So, I mean, it comes up to a panel and the panel votes. And the panel could go one way, it could go the other way.
How many other coworkers were in the same situation as you?
So before the September 1st original deadline, there was over about 400 of us that would have lost our job. And I think that's where let me change this real quick to, instead of a termination, let's change this to a written reprimand. And I think that it was soon realized that if we didn't step back, that we were going to lose 400 firefighters here in Orange County. Now, if you guys know anything about that, that's gonna reduce your reduce our staff, which will reduce our response. If you look up in New York City, it's happening up there. They're shutting down fire stations. Mm-hmm. They don't have enough employees to run the calls. That was going to happen here in Orange County.
Wow.
I can tell you right now, had our union not filed an unfair labor practice, had our organization Operation Freedom of Choice been established, because we established that over the last couple of months, had we not come together and said, look, you're not going to do this, and we pushed back and opened up a lawsuit against the mayor and the Orange County. So had those things not happened, yeah, I think that we could be looking at 400 terminations. Absolutely.
My goodness. Well, we wish you the best, Stephen. And I know that this is a difficult situation. It's not any joyful thing at all, but we know that God uses sometimes even the most difficult things in our lives to bring about a good end. And sure. I'm praying that for you.
He has opened a lot of doors, and we'll see where it takes us. You know, I love the job of being a fireman, but if this is the end of that chapter and I move on to something else because God has a better plan for me, then that's his will. So I'm okay with that.
Thank you so much for that attitude. And it's great to have you here. And friends, thank you for being with us today. We hope to see you next time right here on The Shepherd.